Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Coming up on this episode of White Wine Question Time.
Well, I can either sit here and be terrified, like I was with the jungle, or I can just choose to ignore that voice and go, thanks very much. Yeah, great, I'll do that. She's the double of my wife. When my wife was like 23, which is what I was at the time, I was indeed his wife's daughter. I literally went to see my friend in this performance and sat there thinking, oh my Lord, this is atrocious. This is really atrocious. I could do this. So can you imagine the phone call back to my parents? Hi, I'm coming home, I'm going to be an actor.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week has been a familiar face in our living rooms for almost a quarter of a century now as part of the Coronation Street family. And yet, despite feeling like a friend of the family, we knew relatively little about her until she stepped off the cobbles and into the jungle last year and started opening up around the campfire, putting jaws on the floor as she explained the twists and turns of her own life story. Born in Barnet, she was adopted by loving parents and enjoyed a happy childhood. But as a teenager, she started to struggle with a sense of attachment disorder, which is really common amongst adopted children. She was, she says, something of a lost soul. Amidst the turmoil, she dropped out of school to work as a nanny in Canada. And it was there that she went to see a show where she saw acting so bad in a local production, she thought to herself, I could do better than that, and promptly returned home and secured a place at drama school. It was at this pivotal juncture that her life changed forever, but for reasons that, well, we're going to come to a little bit later, not the ones you'd expect. Soon after drama school, the cobbles came calling, and she stepped into the world of Weatherfield playing Eileen Grimshaw, who she's inhabited for 23 years now. In 1993, she married her first husband, the actor James Quinn, with whom she has a grown-up son, Elliot. They separated in 2003, and she subsequently found love a second time around, on the set of Coronation Street, no less, where she met her current husband, Brian, who's a gaffer on the show. Now in her 60th year, she's getting ready to quite literally start living like a nun, playing Mother Superior in Sister Act, her first theatre role in over 20 years. So let's dial her in, shall we? It's Sue Cleaver. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very good. That was very impressive. I mean, the research done there. Well done.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks. And do you know what? You're not an easy one to research, because I'd say for the first 20 years of your time in Corrie, you deliberately flew under the radar, didn't you?
Yeah, I've never courted that attention, that the byproduct of being an actor can be fame, but it's not something I ever wanted. I think, you know, nowadays you have a whole section of like reality stars who their main goal is, I want to be famous. Whereas an actor, it was the byproduct, and it was kind of like, it was never something that you searched for at all.
Doesn't it kind of undo some of your good work as a professional? Because the more people know you as you, the less they're likely to believe you as the character that you're portraying.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to be said for that. I think also it's quite a unique situation being in a soap, because people are tuning. They are you are real to them. You know, they think they know you. I mean, I remember speaking to quite a well-known film actress who said to me, "The thing is, Sue, when they see me, it's once every 2 years, and I might be walking down the street and they just go, oh my God, they're so-and-so." She says, "Whereas you're in their house 5 times a week. So it's personal. It's a personal relationship that you have with them." And it's so true, because people do think they know you.
Oh God, like, check this for, as a prime example of that, Sue, right? So your esteemed colleague, Kate Ford, plays Tracy Barlow, is a very good friend of mine, and she spends Christmas with us every year. We literally live up the road from one another. And one Christmas, she's over, and some friends pile in the evening, and they've brought friends with them. And, you know, people I hadn't met before, nieces, nephews, that kind of thing. We have a bit of an open house here on Christmas night. And this child comes in and takes one look at Kate, who's kind of stood at my kitchen island, and starts screaming and crying and going, "No, no, murderer!" This poor child. And Kate's going, "God, no, 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 look, I'm just Otis's mummy," because the kids were all running around. This kid was utterly petrified to be in her presence, because to them, she was the murderous Tracy Barlow. So I get it. It's weird.
And I think it's extremely hard if you are a baddie. Because, I mean, I know Simon Gregson years ago when he was younger. I mean, people would try and beat him up.
Adam Woodyatt said that. He's had people be vile to him.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily for me, Eileen hasn't had that. But I did have, I'm a patron of a children's charity, When You Wish Upon a Star, and we take our kids on to Lapland and various things. And I do remember this little girl who saw me. Again, her mouth sort of dropped open. And I was like, "Hi." And she said, "How did you get out of the television?" So I thought, so she thought that I lived in the town. And I said, "Well, don't tell anyone, but there's some stairs at the back, some little steps, and you snuck out down the back. That's our secret." People all the time think, "Oh, you're like, you must come round to ours, because you'd fit in well with our family. You know, it's like you're just like one of us." And it's like, and they forget that actually they don't know the real person.
You. Yeah, it's just Eileen. That's why you choose to act in so many respects, isn't it? Because you love the idea of inhabiting alternative personas.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. And I just, you know, I had, you know, when I went into Corrie, I'd been working lots in London. I'd done theatre, other TV programmes and film. And I missed being at home. My son was like 4. And when Corrie came up, it was like, oh, my Lord, I get the chance to be in a great show, to do what I love doing, and to be there every night to give him a bath, read him a story and put him to bed. And that is unheard of in our business. And that felt like such a privilege. because that family life was the most important thing. Having a stable life for him was the most important thing. And this job has afforded me that opportunity. So I'm incredibly grateful for that. You know, to him, he just wants mum. He never watched the show because The Simpsons were on. And he couldn't bear it if anybody came up to me. He'd be like, you're my mummy. And he didn't want that. So, you know, out of respect for my child, I kind of just always kept under the radar. And again, when he hit his teens, I mean, it was bad enough. He'd say, please don't come. Please don't come to parents' evening. I don't want people to see you. Yeah. And I'd just be like, oh, okay, son. So again, I didn't want to do anything that would, you know, when you hormones of you know, all over the place and you're a teenager and you're trying to find your own tribe, you don't need your mother sticking out like a sore thumb. So
no, yeah. I hear you. I sit here as the mother of a 15-year-old boy. Yeah. And he would rather I didn't come to football than did at the moment. For those reasons, it's just like it's a distraction.
Yeah. And it's you just have to go with it. And sometimes it hurts your feelings. But, you know, look, mine's 28 now. I've done my bit. This is why I went in the jungle. I've looked after who I need to look after. They've gone off now. What they do now is up to them. I'm out. This is my time.
Listen, I want to talk to you about a sabbatical that you're about to take from Corrie for very good reason, because as you said just minutes ago, you know, you've done your looking after people. You can go off and do things that you would not otherwise have been able to do as the mother of a younger child. Mm-hmm. And that includes going off on a tour around the UK, treading the boards as Mother Superior in Sister Act the Musical. I mean, off she goes.
Yeah, I mean, Kay, I look good in a wimple. I look so good in a wimple. So I'm going to delight the public. Yeah, I haven't been on stage for, 20 years. And it was always my first love. It's always been my first love. So when they called me a few months ago and said, hey, how do you fancy doing Sister Act? I was like, well, I can either sit here and be terrified, like I was with The Jungle, or I can just choose to ignore that voice and go, thanks very much. Yeah, great, I'll do that. And that's what I've done. I am not allowing myself time anymore to sit and overthink things. And just if I want to do it, if I'm interested, then I'll say yes. And I'm not going to be, I'm not allowing myself to go, oh my God, but I've not been on stage for 20 years. And oh, what if this? And oh my, I haven't sung. Oh, what if I can't sing? What if I can't remember the lines? I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. So yes.
Good for you. Where's this come from, Sue?
Where's it come from? I've always been, I'm fascinated by human psyche. I would have been fascinated with my own human psyche, which led me, I had some therapy, and then that's how I ended up going on and training as a psychotherapist. And I sort of moved on from that. And I'm just really interested about how we as human works. And I look inwardly. I reflect a lot. I have been quite tough on myself. I think I've been a massive overthinker. And I just now have an understanding about where I am, what I need to do, and where I want to go. And so I'm just, you know, touching wood and just pursuing that. I mean, I had setbacks this year that sort of put me back on my journey of moving forward. But, you know, that happens in life. We all go through bad bits, but it's about, you know, getting back in the saddle and moving on.
And are you better now, Sue? Because I know you've had some real ups and downs with your health, haven't you?
I have. I am better now. Yeah, I've had a pretty rubbish year. It started off with a hysterectomy and kind of went downhill from then, all out of the blue, weird stuff. But yeah, I was poorly for a while. So I've been off Corrie, hardly been in sort of 6-7 months, which is really strange. Really strange. But they've been wonderful and very supportive. And I'm actually back in work tomorrow.
Ah. And so how are you after your hysterectomy? Because that just plummets you straight into menopause. So whilst it solves a lot of problems, it presents loads more.
Yeah, I was already post-menopause. But, yeah. But no, it has impacted in certain ways that I didn't expect.
Really?
So, yeah, And then I went on and I got, you know, I found myself in A&E and then in intensive care, and that kind of took over really. So it's been a challenging 6 months.
But you're better now. You're slowly getting back on your feet.
I am. I'm raring to go. I'm back. I've just been to the gym. I've just had an aqua class, and I'm just getting fit and healthy, and getting all ready for 2024.
Wow. Well, I hope it's kinder to you than 2023. Are you ready for your first question?
Yeah.
You are no stranger to a major storyline. But I wonder, what have been the biggest moments in your own life that would have made for gripping viewing?
I think, obviously, my adoption story, which is, you know, quite an incredible story and way too long to go into. But, I didn't search for my birth mother. It just, the universe just dropped her in my lap, you know, as I was doing a show at the Royal Exchange, Oedipus of all things, and an actor in there basically recognised me and said, he said, Michael N. Harbour was named, and he said to David Threlfall, who was playing Oedipus, he says, oh, she's the double of my wife, when my wife was like 23, which is what I was at the time. And to cut a very long story short, I was indeed his wife's daughter. So that was quite an incredible story. And two half-sisters also in the business, with a lot of coincidences. That synchronicity in my life has proved to be a massive thing. There's a lot of synchronicity in my life.
When you told that story around the campfire, I think everybody was just agog, both in the jungle and sat at home watching, because what are the chances? And you had really struggled up until that point as well with the fact that you were adopted. Not struggled as much as felt adrift. You had a sense of detachment that you've spoken quite openly about. So had you ever even thought to yourself, I'm going to go and find my birth parents and see who I am and where I'm from?
Never. I had wonderful parents, really wonderful parents. But I definitely had, as so many adopted children do, a lack of identity, and was searching for myself everywhere, you know, just trying to find my tribe as such, find out where I fitted in. I think adopted kids, well, any kid who's, you know, not been around there, been brought up or into their birth family, you know, sometimes they go through life not ever looking like another human being, not ever seeing a trait of themselves in another person, not like, you know, like, oh, look, she's got a dad's, she's got a dad's nose, or, you know, that was your grandma's hair. And I know they sound little things, but they're huge. And going, I remember being as a child, every time we went to the GP for anything, for a sore throat, for anything, and the doctor would say, can you just step outside for a minute? And I go, no, I don't need to. I know I'm adopted. Because they used to just, that was always like, you know, it's like, you know, every time you're, oh, does it run in your family? I don't know. So anytime I had a medical thing, is it in your family? I don't know, you know. So, yeah, I did have, my teens were particularly, not a time in my life I really like to think about at all, really. I struggled as a teenager. But, yeah, I never planned to go searching, ever. Not at all. So it was extraordinary that it happened, really extraordinary.
I mean, so extraordinary that your mother's husband ends up in the same company as you. I mean, just what were the chances? And where had your mum been all these years? Where was she living?
She was living in London with her husband and her two children, my two younger half-sisters, who are also...
Did they all know about you?
Oh, I've just been on a holiday with my half-sister, Kate. We've just been away for 10 days together, yeah. Yeah, we're all great. I mean, my mum is my mum. You know, the family that brought me up is, to me, my mum. My birth mum felt like, I mean, unfortunately, she died at the beginning of the pandemic. She was more like an extended relation, really, a cousin. But yeah, I mean, my mum and her were friends. They'd been to stay with each other. We, you know, visited. My birth grandmother is still alive. She's 104. So no. She's incredible. So many coincidences. My one of the first people I met, she won't mind me telling you this, when I met Leslie, and this was at the Royal Exchange, so I was 23, one of the first people who came to see me was Helen Wirth, you know, who plays Gail. Because she lived with my birth mother when she was young, and she always knew that Leslie had had a child adopted. So she was one of the few people who knew, and she's godmother to one of my half sisters. So it's there's more. The coincidences are extraordinary. So I met Helen years before. So when I went into Corrie, that was really funny. Yeah. So because she often will be sitting in the makeup room, and I'll be talking, and she'll come and she says, that laugh, that was just like Leslie. She says, "Oh, you've got your grandmother's décolletage," she says. So, yeah, it's really it's incredible story. So that would definitely be the storyline. Maybe I'll suggest
it. Yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, in a writer's room, they might be going, "Ah, it's a bit far-fetched."
Yeah, exactly. And they, I mean, with that story, over the years comes many more coincidences, which are just like strange. It follows me.
And what were the chances that, you know, when you were tapped on the shoulder by this guy, and he turns around and says, you look extraordinarily like my wife, that you would end up from an acting family? You know, your sisters are in the business, your mum was an actress, and yet that hadn't even, I mean, it was something you'd not even considered.
Yeah, Kate, my half-sister Kate, my youngest half-sister, she was Wendy in Bob the Builder.
No.
So she's like big in animation. So she's in everything, and, you know, that's her specialty. She's amazing.
Because when you're in Canada and you saw this rubbish play, you hadn't until then thought at all about becoming an actress, had you?
No, I literally went to see my friend in this performance and sat there thinking, oh, my Lord, this is atrocious. This is really atrocious. I could do this. And literally went, oh, that's what I want to do. Oh, gosh, I don't know why I didn't think of this before. Yeah, I want to be an actor. So can you imagine the phone call back to my parents? Hi, I'm coming home. I'm going to be an actor. I mean, and that was in the days where, you know, it was like this was like the beginning of the 80s. It's like you didn't, I mean, it was still when you went to careers at school, not that I finished school, but it was still like you could be a secretary or a nurse. I remember they gave me my options. And I was like, that's never going to happen. I mean, I've always been a rebel, and I would always find my own way. And I was never very good with authority figures. So if anyone had said no to me, then I would, yeah, I will do that. And I think that's what I did to my parents. Yeah, I will be an actor. I'll show you. It stood me in good stead.
God, it really did, didn't it? It really did. Yeah. So it turns out it was in those bones of yours all along.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It absolutely was. So.
And, you know, do you think back to moments like, for example, when Elliot was little, you must have had Bob the Builder on at some point, you know, the fact that your sister would end up being, you know, had you not had that tap on the shoulder when you were much younger, you know, she still would have been in your living room, for example, in your home, but not necessarily known to you.
I suppose so. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, absolutely. That's so funny because it's just, you know, it's so, to us now, it's so commonplace, but it still catches us out. Like, say, Kate and I were away, We were on a cruise recently. We were very kindly invited on, and Linda Robson was on it as well. And Kate and I were sharing.
I saw you two tobogganing in Madeira.
Madeira, yeah, that was very funny. So Kate and I shared a cabin together, and we hadn't sort of been in a situation sharing a room for sort of 10 nights. But there were just so many things that I was like, oh my God, I recognize what she does. It's kind of like, it was still a novelty to me that we'd ordered the same things to eat. We liked the same things. We'd approach things the same way. It was just funny. It was just really funny, that familiarity that I just find is fascinating to me, because I, for so many years of my life, I didn't look like anybody. I didn't, sorry, that was the dog just trying to pull the plug out the wall. Be careful, come on your bed. I didn't look like anybody. I didn't have anything, you know, I didn't see any similarities. I mean, I remember when my son was born, it was like, I was so overwhelmed of this little person that I was like, oh my God, he's part of me. Look, I can even see, look at him. He looks like me. He's like, it's just, it was such a novelty to me. Such a big deal.
Yeah, I can well imagine. Well, I'm so glad that that moment did happen for you, because it must have felt like in so many ways you're completing a jigsaw.
Yeah, it answered a lot of questions for me. Mm-hmm. And it did, it was a good experience for me. I think I was lucky. I think for a lot of people, when they find their, if they go and trace their birth mothers, they can be disappointed or, you know, be greeted with more rejection. I don't think I would have ever done that for that very reason. So I was very fortunate that I was welcomed with open arms, and that both my families were so amazing about it.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Your second question, Sue. Your experience of therapy sounds, well, rather similar to mine. It was so transformative for me that I ended up signing up to study as a counsellor, although you have, in fact, gone one step further and are studying to become a psychotherapist. But what I found most intriguing about that whole process is that whilst you're studying, you have to be in therapy. So you're in therapy, but you're not in crisis necessarily. I certainly wasn't. And that for me was where the really deep learnings and better understandings of myself came. And I wondered, has that been your experience too?
So when I went to therapy because I got to a place in my life where the adoption thing, I think, was still creating issues in my life. This, you know, and that's why I went to therapy. And I found it really, really helpful. It did help me to sort of a look at what they termed my attachment disorder. And then, as you say, when I decided to train, you do have to go to therapy every week. I found it, well, one I suppose the one thing with therapy is you're just, every time you go, you're starting to loosen another layer of the onion, aren't you? And so you could go on forever and ever and ever examining yourself and questioning and asking. And that led me, I did train for 3 years. I couldn't do the fourth year because I was so busy. I was in a massive serial killer storyline. But then I started to look outside of that. I was introduced to the three principles, which, you know, people can go and look it up if they want to. And I realized that a lot of my issues in my life had been down to overthinking everything. And right. In a sense, once I dealt with what I needed to deal with and an understanding of myself, continuing going to therapy was continuing, and actually studying was continuing that pattern of constant overthinking. And when you're overthinking, you don't find peace. So where I am now, I've moved from that because I feel that the lot of people overthinking is the problem, and believing our thinking, believing our own thoughts, and believe just because we hear something and we believe it when it's not the truth. And it, to me now, it's about quietening down. But yeah, I mean, anything, anywhere you go where you become interested in how humans operate is a great thing. And now, I mean, my biggest thing that I would say to people about, you know, how to live your life is become an observer in your own life. Catch yourself in moments, patterns that you have, because be an observer on your shoulder and go, I see what I'm doing now. This is the bit where I beat myself up or hate on myself or this. I don't need to do this. So observing what you do is really useful.
See, that's the stuff that I got from those 2 years in therapy, because the first time I went to therapy as a teenager, I was very unwell with anorexia and bulimia, and it really helped me. And then many, many, many years later, I went to try and come to terms with the fact that my family hadn't worked out, that I was a single parent, and that sense of failure. And it helped me in those two moments. So then I went on to study, and then once I was studying, I wasn't trying to deal with, you know, I wasn't trying to put out a fire. Everything was good in my world.
Yeah.
And then you start to look at yourself and go, I think before I could get to the bit where I started to like myself, I had to really unlike myself, because I was like, I'd come out of a therapy session and go, shit, I'm so judgmental. I am so judgmental, because I was observing myself. I was looking at myself, checking my behaviours. Why do you do that? Why are you this? Why are you that? And it was painful, but so productive towards the end. And I remember sitting there at the end of the 2 years and I just thought, gosh, you know, this has been so good for me. It felt like I'd been to some sort of, it felt like a retreat in my own mind, where I'd unpicked myself, chucked out all the stuff that I didn't like, and just retained the bits that I did. And I just think there's so much benefit to people doing that, but it's a luxury most people can't afford.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, that's what I feel about it. It is a luxury. And yes, it was incredibly useful, and it set me on a path to where I am now. But I would say that it's not the only way. I think it's really important, because it is a luxury. And for there is another way. And
the three principles were first described by a Scottish welder. His name was Sidney Banks, back in 1973, so 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it focuses on three key factors which interact to form people's psychological experience. So you've got your mind, you've got consciousness, and you've got thought. Those are the three principles, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You're spot on. We could go on forever.
And it's really helped you.
That's where I am now, and what I, you know, try and it's just so simple, and it's just so accessible, and it's out there for anyone.
So if people do want to look at this, just Google it. It's the three principles. There's a ton of stuff online about it. But for you, it's been really formative, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely has. Definitely for me, I found it really useful in my life. I mean, interesting that you were saying about making judgment about yourself, and it's... Mm. Well, it's just being a human. Just being a human. I mean, I think that's the one thing, is take away that thing from people. Take away judging people, and because that's what I used to do. You know, I was my own worst critic. Yeah. And the voices, you know, some of the things that we say to ourselves, if we said that to someone else, you know, be horrified. You're a really horrible person, Kate. You're disgusting. You're mean. You're nasty. You know, people would be horrified going, oh, my God, you can't say that.
It's abusive behaviour.
We say that to ourselves all the time.
Yeah, it is. It's self-abuse.
And without becoming aware of these voices, of that judgmental. Humans do the best they can, I believe, with what they have at that time. And let's stop beating up on ourselves.
But I think what I meant about that judgment comment was that if I had met somebody that judged people in the way that I discovered that subconsciously I was, I don't know that I'd like them very much. So I wanted to change that.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to become somebody that I would like were I to meet me.
Where does that come from? It just comes from awareness. Like I said, being aware.
Yeah.
When you're aware of something, it'll fall into place.
And it's really fascinating the amount of time we invest in our physical health, for example. I do, you know, I spend a lot of time exercising and getting my 10,000 steps in. And, you know, I probably spend longer on my skincare routine than sometimes I do on my mental well-being, in as much as there have been times in my life where that's been true. And that's the thing I've tried to tweak and address. And I think it's finding what works for you. So if the three principles are the thing that works for you right now, brilliant. Yoga is your thing, meditation, just find your thing.
Yeah, because I think so. I think find what works for you. You know, I'm all for that. Absolutely. Definitely.
And no judgment.
And no judgment. Be kind to them.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Thank you. Okay, my third and final question for you, Sue. If you had to get stuck in a moment from your past, a moment that you could revisit, relive, and drink in all over again, what would it be and why?
Do you know what instantly comes to mind?
Go on.
Coming over the bridge from the jungle, coming out and seeing my son stood there.
Ah.
That was just the best. That was just the best. Seeing his face, being able to give him a big squeeze, and him being there saying, "You nailed it, Mum, you nailed it." Yeah. Never get bored of that.
And why was that so important to you?
He was proud of me. My boy was proud of me. And that meant a lot to me. That meant a huge amount to me. It was just so lovely that, you know, he approved what I'd done, and I think he was amazed I did it in the first place. And it was a big moment for me and him, just seeing him there.
You'd never put Sue Cleaver out there in that way in all the years that you'd been his mum, deliberately so.
Yeah.
What was it like being you on camera? Was there a liberation in that?
Yeah, I think because, to be honest, once you get in there, you know, there's cameras sort of hidden all over, but you do forget they're there.
Yeah,
I mean, you just forget they're there and just get on with your life. So, I mean, in that moment when I told that story about my adoption, I completely forgotten that there were people at home watching this. And that's what happens. That's what makes it a great TV, doesn't it? Because people, you know, reveal things about themselves, and you see aspects of people that you don't expect to see because they've clearly forgotten that you just can't, you know, it's like you've got 24 hours a day that you're filling in there with absolutely nothing to do apart from the one person who's gone off to do a trial. The rest of you are sat around that fireplace or doing your washing or going down to the creek. And, you know, so it's like endless, endless boredom, hours to fill. Yeah, so you forget about that there's anybody filming you.
Wow.
So it just came
Did you ever have the fear in there of like, oh my God, have I said anything that's going to come and bite me on the bum on the way out? Or was there that kind of sense of paranoia? Because you've never really been that much of yourself.
Yeah, I've been in this business a long time. I know that whatever you do, there will always be the ones that, you know, the trollers, the haters, whatever. And I at that stage now, I just like, oh, I don't care. You know, that says more about you than it does me. You know, you have a problem. You really have a problem if I'm having that impact and you don't even know me, you've never met me. Turn the TV off or just don't follow me. But, you know, just give yourself a break. Look after yourself. So I was going in prepared for what would be.
And so you just care less now.
I do. I care less what people think.
Good.
I really don't. If somebody takes time and effort to write a text about me or put something on Instagram, I don't really read it. Two, you know, I just think, oh God, they're not okay, are they? They're not okay in themselves. Because I don't bother about commenting about anyone. I don't know. I wouldn't, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, no, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me.
Good for you. So you've got this whole new attitude to life in recent years, which I know you've touched upon when you've appeared on shows like Loose Women, for example, just saying as you got into your kind of 60th year, it was just a bit, you know, more of this, please, more caring less, doing more, not overthinking and taking a few risks.
Absolutely. Not overthinking everything. Not listening to that voice that goes, you know, oh my God, but this could happen. Oh, what if? No. I don't listen to that voice. I don't believe what that voice says. That voice is not my friend. I wait for the quiet moments of wisdom that appear, which we all have. And I'm not talking about intelligence. I'm talking about those moments of wisdom, that gut instinct that you just listen to and ignore the chatter.
Yeah. It takes years to hone that, though, as you are testament.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I talk to my son about it and, you find it in your own time.
Yeah.
Find it in your own time.
That's lovely to hear. And the fact that you're out doing things that you would never otherwise have done, like the jungle last year, like going out and playing Mother Superior and Sister Act next year. What else is on your list of devil may care? Come on then, let's do this.
Well, I look forward to the phone ringing now. I look forward to the phone ringing and I don't automatically, which I used to go like, no, oh no, no. I go, leave it with me. And it's my interest, if I'm like, oh, this is exciting. I quite fancy this. And then often what I do with the jungle, it went backwards and forwards and I'd said, no. It went backwards and forwards and then about to turn it down and I was like, shall I do it, shan't I do it? And I tossed a coin because when you toss a coin, when it came up, it said the came up, don't do it. And it was tails, don't do it. And I automatically went, oh, so that gave me my answer that I should do it because I listened to that wisdom, that little thing that went, oh, was enough. Then I knew that something in me wanted to do it.
Well, I'm glad you did.
So I always say, if you've got any major decision, toss a coin, because how you feel, I mean, what you get, if you feel good when you get that, don't do it, you know it's the right decision.
Yeah. Well, gut instinct. I'd have listened to my gut as a younger woman, I'm sure my decisions would have been radically different, radically different.
Yeah, me too.
You live and learn. Yeah. Best of luck with the torso, and I'm glad that you're back in good health, and it'll be lovely to see you back on our screens in Curry as well. Thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Nice to speak to you.
My huge thanks to Sue Cleaver. You can see her, of course, in Coronation Street, or if live theatre is your thing, go watch her in her first show in over 20 years. She'll be touring Sister Act across the UK next year. Tickets are available at all the usual outlets. And if the talk of adoption resonated with you and you'd like to hear more episodes that deal with this as a subject, then head into our back catalogue, where there's a fascinating episode with Lisa Faulkner, who's an adopting mother, so she's adopted her daughter, where she sits down and talks to the poet laureate Lem Sissé, who was famously adopted and then given back. It is one of our most interesting episodes, I think. I love it. It's one I'm most proud of. So that's in the back catalogue. Or for more chat with fellow thespians, there's Mark Bonner in our back catalogue. You can see him at the moment in Napoleon. Luke Evans is in there. Alan Cummings, Tracy Ann Oberman, Tamsin Outhwaite, Hannah Waddingham, and so many more. I'll be back on Tuesday with another visit to the White Wine Question Time cellar for some vintage conversations. Until then, thanks so much for listening.
Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.